You're listening to The MemoCast, brought to you by Wreck-It Magazine.
Guys and gals and everyone in between, this is episode 3 of the MemoCast. I am Mike.
I am Armando.
And this week we have an awesome episode lined up for you. We are talking about, of course, the new Batman, Superman, Dawn of Justice movie, trailer for The Flash. We went and saw Godzilla and X-Men Days of Future Past. We're also going to be talking about Dungeons & Dragons and some of the director changes for Ant-Man and Daredevil. So without much further ado, let's jump right into it.
All right, yes. So the first thing we want to start off with is the She-Hulk incident. For those of you who may not have heard, or for those of you who just somehow missed it, recently David Goyer, writer of Man of Steel, and then writer for the upcoming Batman vs. Superman Dawn of Justice, was on a podcast a little while ago and said some quite not so nice comments about the She-Hulk, equating her to just a big giant green porn star there for the Hulk to just have sex with, and that is problematic on top of not even really
incestuous.
Inaccurate given their relationship.
Yeah, canonically incestuous. That's what that is.
Yeah. So, you know, it's very unfortunate that someone who holds a lot of, I guess you'd say, power as far as the DC Cinematic Universe goes has, like, this, you know, interpretation of quite the iconic character. And the entire internet even kind of posted and railed against this guy to the point where the episode was taken down, you know. So, Mike, you want to give your thoughts, and then I'll maybe say a few things you might have not said by the time you're done?
For me, I think it just speaks to the internalized misogyny and sexism throughout, not just nerd culture, but just culture in general.
Yeah.
Especially in light of recent events that happened this weekend that we're not really going to touch other than just kind of mentioning them. I think it really speaks loads to the fact that we, as a culture, have such an internalized kind of almost hatred of women. And it sucks that a guy who's so in charge of this huge franchise that's supposed to be introducing one of the greatest feminist superhero characters of all time is saying shit like this.
What kind of interpretation are we of Wonder Woman are we going to get if this is the kind of stuff he's saying right now?
Exactly.
And I believe Alyssa Rosenberg wrote a great article saying, I would rather not see an interpretation of this great hero done by someone who doesn't really know what they're talking about I'd rather not see an interpretation than see one that doesn't do it justice.
Yeah.
And, you know, maybe he spoke out of turn, whatever, but, like, this just did not, like, get me, like, stoked on the upcoming movie, which we will just go into right now.
Yeah.
Segues really easily, and that is they recently announced the title of the new Man of Steel sequel that is also a Justice League prequel that introduces the Justice League, but is not the Justice League, but somehow serves as a Man of Steel sequel, and now we're both cross-eyed.
Yep.
So yes, it is called Batman versus Superman, Dawn of Justice, and this makes me laugh a lot, but also makes me think a little bit. And the reason why I'm laughing is because Superman is somehow playing second fiddle in his own sequel.
I think they're trying to do too much. I think they're trying to do too much at once, and they're trying to catch up to Marvel.
Yeah.
And all the groundwork that Marvel has laid throughout the Avengers movies, Iron Man, Captain America. Yeah. They've had all these movies since what? When did Iron Man?
2007, 2008.
Yeah, came out, and now they're trying to like...
Maybe even sooner than that, I feel like. I forget the exact dates, but we know it was relatively...
Yeah, and now DC and Warner Brothers is trying to, like, play catch-up and introduce all this shit so they can compete with the new Avengers movies coming out soon, sooner, without laying all this groundwork. And I think the entire franchise as a whole is going to suffer, story-wise, maybe representation of the characters-wise. I know last week I said that there's not really much you can do to devalue these characters and hurt the franchises, but... I feel that story-wise, I think the fans are really going to suffer and have to sit through a kind of a crappy story for at least this go-round.
Well, you know what? I agree with you and disagree with you to an extent. I don't feel like they're trying to play catch-up. What I think it is I think that DC has had this problem, is that I feel like they're afraid to take risks of doing solo films about, you know, about really having these characters established. And I think they were finally getting over that fear of Green Lantern, but given how that was, you know, panned critically and, you know, commercially, yeah. I think now they're just even more scared than they were before.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like rather than, like, take a risk on a movie that they feel could or could not go anywhere, it's like, well, if we anchor these smaller heroes, although to call one of them a smaller hero is an yeah. insult to the character, but you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
But, or what they would see as smaller, like we need to anchor these heroes with our big two that have been known to bring in the bucks.
Yeah, I think trying to center this entire franchise around Batman and Superman is kind of, excuse me, a mistake.
Yeah.
In that, you know, you look at the Justice League cartoon, you look at Young Justice, you look at Teen Titans, all these cool franchises that did well in the animated universes, that I think if they took elements of those storylines and those characters and they brought them to the big screen, we would have a success.
Well, you know what's funny is that it's not like they don't know that these cartoons exist. It's like, you know...
Yeah.
So I don't get why they can't bring... You're right. They should be bringing inspiration from those properties, and they don't. And I'm always boggled
mm-hmm.
or baffled as to why. It's like... You, what's stopping you? It's not like you don't own those, you know, those like the yeah. rights to those cartoons to take and pull whatever you want.
Exactly. I mean, look how many of those they have tons of these little standalone animated
which
movies.
Are fantastic.
Yeah, I would love to see some of those storylines brought to the big screen and actually played out live yeah. action.
Well, I think most if not all of those are actually just based off individual like comic book stories. You know, like Justice League. Doom is based off of a specific storyline. Mm-hmm. Like the most recent or the second most recent one, Justice League War is based off of the first story arc in the New 52 Justice League.
Okay.
Son of Batman is based off of Grant Morrison's a little run of Batman comics, I believe, under the same name.
Yeah.
So like I said, that would make more sense to try and just do these standalone movies for them, given yeah. that they don't want to do solo films, just do standalones.
Mm-hmm. And don't even deal with origin stories.
Yeah.
Like, these characters are so pervasive in our culture at large, not just nerd culture, that we don't need to know their origins. Everyone just kind of knows, like, oh, yeah, well, that's, you know, he gets his power from the ring, and the ring chose him. That's...
Well, it's not even just that, but Batman and Superman especially don't need an origin. You know he's Bruce Wayne, you know he's a millionaire, you know his parents died, you know the basic symptoms of Superman, you know he's the last son of Krypton.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, it's just stuff that is just common knowledge to even those outside of the nerdosphere towards, like, just don't give us the origin.
Yeah.
That's why I felt like Man of Steel, it wasn't, even though it was like an origin film, it wasn't really like an origin story. They just, what they did was they kept doing flashbacks.
Yeah.
You know, but I mean, even then that has like mixed opinions as to whether or not that was a good or bad movie.
Yeah.
But just going off this Justice League topic, we just showed Mike the trailer for the Flash TV show coming to the CW that he was supposed to look at like a week and a half ago.
I got busy.
Doing what?
Doing
being a sexy little baby.
Oh, so, okay, whoa, we're not stealing Grump stuff here.
Yeah.
See, this is the thing. We should take like this, just bounding off this entire DC. This is the DC half plus Godzilla.
Godzilla's DC, not yeah. really, but it'd be funny if he was.
Yeah. We should just really tell interesting, cool stories about these characters in their universes. I mean, we should just make live-action comic books. That's what it should be. It should just be telling interesting stories about these characters and sometimes have them jump into each other's, you know, shows and do team-ups.
Yeah.
That's what we should be doing. I mean, like, they should... What would be really cool is because they have the Green Arrow
yeah.
in this trailer, you know, kind of guiding Barry, you know, into becoming a superhero.
Yeah.
I think it'd be really cool if they brought back... What's his name? From Smallville.
I don't know if they bring back Welling.
Maybe.
I feel like they wouldn't. I feel like, well, now we have, like, 8 Supermans.
That's true. But as far as the TV universe goes.
Yeah, I just don't think they would. I think this is, like, they're finally establishing their own thing. But what I realize is that I feel like certain comic book characters work better in TV than they would in movies. And I feel like the Flash is one, or even Arrow, are one that would work better. Because, I don't know, it's, I feel like writing a movie about a guy who can run really fast would get a little cheesy if you try to make it like this big blockbuster, but on the TV, mm-hmm. you know, drama scale, it works a lot better.
This is true, and we actually even touched upon this the other day when we were talking about our rebooted DC Cinematic Universe. We were trying to figure out where to put the Flash, mm-hmm. and we were like, we're going through all the different movies that we came up with, and we were like, screw it, just put him in the Green Lantern Martian Manhunter movie. Like, he's in space with them somehow.
He'll make it work.
He'll make it work.
Yeah.
So I think you're right there. I think that you're absolutely right that the Flash, this TV show, is probably... I might actually go back and watch Arrow.
Yeah.
Just to kind of...
I've seen a couple episodes. It's enjoyable, but I've missed so much. I feel like I just need to go on to Netflix or Hulu, whatever it's being hosted, and just start from the beginning and watch it straight through.
Just binge it?
Yeah.
Okay.
And it's funny, because like, now see the CW is just going to be like the DC like television spot.
Well, they're owned by Warner Brothers.
Well, I know they are.
Remember, back in the day, they were the WB.
Yeah, I know, but it's just funny.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, you know, because it's like the CW... for the most part, like, has a lot of different, like, don't they have, like, Vampire Diaries and all that stuff?
They have Supernatural.
Yeah.
They used to host Buffy for the longest time.
No, then I guess it does make more sense than I'm giving it credit for. I don't keep up with the CW/WB verse.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I'm excited. The trailer, it was funny is that, like, for me, as far as the Flash goes, he's always someone I don't really give a lot of credit because I feel like his rogues gallery is kind of a joke.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny because there are people who are like, he has, like, the best rogues gallery. It's like, no, he doesn't. He's like, let's see, what is it? Is it Captain Cold and Weather Wizard and, what's it called, Mirror Master? Captain Boomerang or whatever his name is. It's like, dude, these don't sound cool. They sound like...
They sound like characters from a Saturday morning, like, variety show. Like, yeah. Captain Boomerang's Cartoon Funhouse! Woo!
Like, hey, look who I brought with me. I brought Weather Wizard. He's gonna tell us the 5-day forecast. You know, it's like, they don't sound very threatening. And Weather Wizard looked really cool here.
He actually looked like a legit, like, villain that I would be like, holy shit, I'm kind of scared of this guy.
He's like... I need to think bigger.
Let's make a tornado.
A big tornado. And then the Flash is like, I'm going to run fast in the opposite direction.
Okay, maybe we're giving this show a little too much credit, but...
No, I felt like they peppered the speed puns, you know, like, mm-hmm. here and there to where it wasn't overbearing, but at the same time, you're kind of like, guys.
We'll see. We'll withhold judgment until it actually comes out.
To be honest, though, like, if I had to give it, like, a grade as to how, like, it made me feel about the franchise and how excited I am for it, I would give it, like, an A-, or a solid A.
Okay.
You know?
I agree with that.
Yeah. And, now that we've kind of discussed all these different things going on in the DC universe, let's talk about Godzilla.
Yeah, so we went to go see Godzilla, and I have to say, I thought it was a little bit of a cock tease. By the way, we're going to spoil the shit out of Godzilla.
Days of Future Past.
Yeah, so at any point we go see a movie, we're going to spoil the shit out of it, just for future reference. So this is your chance to skip forward to after the break. Or during the break, listen to the music that Mondo picked out for us this week. So yeah, Gojira. Here are my thoughts on it. I thought it very much kept in... It tried to keep in with the theme of the old Toho movies, like they said they wanted to. It wasn't just about the monsters. It was about some of the human drama going on behind it. As some people said, it did kind of suffer from boring white guy syndrome.
Yeah.
With the, you know, the whole Bryan Cranston son just, like, being about him and his wife and their kid, you know. Yeah. I think it would have benefited for us more to see more about the scientist. I even forget his name. That's how little he was in the movie.
Yeah, I just remember the actor was Ken Watanabe, or how you pronounce his last name.
Yeah.
And speaking of which, I felt he got really shafted because they just gave him all the hokey, shitty dialogue.
They really did give him the stereotypical...
He's like, you know, let them fight.
Yeah, mystical Asian man dialogue.
It was like, Godzilla's here to bring balance. I was like, he's a giant lizard. I don't think he knows the concept of balance.
Yeah. So...
I was like, come on, guys. Like, what I'm disappointed is that for, like, a movie that originally starts in Japan, I didn't see enough, like, Japanese people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was like, even, like, Bryan Cranston's boss somehow was white. Yeah. Oh, why are you white? Because reasons.
Yeah, I'm some Texas energy tycoon here in Japan in the 1990s. Like, it was really...
Yeehaw!
He throws his hat up in the air and starts doing six shooting. Yeah, but for its failings, I thought it did some really cool stuff as far as they did really try and keep it in the same vein as the old Toho movies. The acronym for the Muto.
Yeah.
That is a Japanese pronunciation of the acronym. They could have very well, you know, did the Americanized Anglican.
Like Muto.
Yeah, Mutos. That's what we would have called it.
It's a Muto.
Yeah, and they kept pronouncing it Muto, which I thought was pretty cool. It was kind of a nice nod.
Yeah.
There is an Easter egg in maybe the first act of the movie where they reference Mothra.
Yeah.
When they go back into the supposedly radioactive zone
that
they were evacuated from, you see a terrarium, and just for a second, in the corner of the screen that says Mothra on the side of it. So I thought that was pretty cool.
It's there for a good three or four. Like, they don't really, like, focus on it because you just see Aaron Taylor Johnson or whatever looking around.
Mm-hmm.
So if you know it's coming up, you'll see it. But if not, you could escape your view.
Yeah. And I have a feeling that they referenced more monsters other than Mothra subtly.
That's
like
just
that.
The one we just saw real quickly.
Yeah.
And you know what was interesting is that someone was telling me, because I had this, like, I don't want to say an argument, but, like, a disagreement with someone on Facebook, because that's what Facebook is for.
Yeah.
And pretty much she was saying, like, oh, yeah, like, these were bats. And I was like, I'm pretty sure they were insects.
Mm-hmm.
You know, at best, you could say the male was, like, a bat, like, insect hybrid because of its wings. But I was like, the female didn't even have wings at all. What bat doesn't have wings?
Yeah, no, I'm thinking they're more, like... Especially with the giant difference. Now we're getting to the biology of Mutos. But especially with the difference in gender being so startling and stark, you don't see that in a lot of mammalian species.
Yeah, that's a very insect thing where, like, usually the female, like black widows. The black widow's way bigger than the female's bigger than the male.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And the egg sac, I was like, what? Like, mammalian, like, who does that?
No, they were insects.
Yeah.
Your friend is horribly mistaken, does not know a lot about biology.
Maybe. I don't know. Well, I think she got confused because Bryan Cranston's character is researching, like, echolocation on the past.
Ah, yeah.
And they, like, wasn't, like, the original, like, things, like, their cocoons that were found in, like, caves.
Yeah.
I don't think that was, like, to make you think, oh, they're bats, but, whatever. So I thought it was interesting. I just wanted to, like, see what you thought about them. Be like, hey, is Mondo dumb? Because Mondo is pretty dumb sometimes,
mm-hmm.
like right now, because I'm referring myself to third person. But I had to double check.
Yeah.
And so it's good to know. I felt like to an extent, it was a bit of a cock tease, but I see it less as a cock tease, but more as, like, foreplay. They didn't give it to you all at once. You know, they warmed you up. It was kind of like, Michael. It's like, we're going to have... It's like, she's like, let me slip into something, like, more comfortable. And then instead of Godzilla coming out naked, she comes out in a nightie.
Mm. I can see what you're saying.
Yeah.
I still disagree because I feel like it really, really... The pacing was kind of jarring.
Where to an extent.
You know, they get to this point to where the male Muto and Godzilla are about to go at it in the jungles of Hawaii, and there's all these resorts are down there, and you get to watch some really cool disaster porn with, like, a tsunami coming in as Godzilla makes landfall. And then they're just about to brush up. They're just about to tear each other apart. And then it literally smash cuts to a kid sleeping. And you only get to watch a little bit of fighting on a TV screen in the background. And it's kind of like, come on, really? At least give us a little bit more than that. We've been watching all these whiny white people running around doing stuff, the military completely going against protocol, and letting a guy that was at the site of a secret disaster that they're still trying to cover up go home to his family.
Mike, it's a giant lizard. I think once the giant lizard and giant bugs come out, I think protocol goes out the fucking window.
I'm just saying. That's just my take
on it. Look, we don't care about military protocol. What we do care about is that it's time to take a little break. Mm-hmm. Because you're probably at this point being like, man, guys, shut up. You're both wrong. but so we got two songs.
Two songs again.
Well, the first one's like 45 seconds.
Okay.
It's the first song is KKK Highway by the MU330, and it's about how the KKK, I guess, adopted a highway out somewhere in the Midwest in Illinois.
That makes sense.
Some time ago.
Something they would do.
Yeah. And so it's a quick little ska ditty because I felt like we hadn't played any. And then we have a Soviet song because I felt like, you know what, we haven't played any, like, a lady, like, you know, fronted or, like, just, we haven't played any bands with women in it. So I'm like, you know what, I'll play the Soviets because they're awesome, they kick ass, and it's just, you know, got to equally represent. So we'll play those songs, and then when we come back, we are going to jump into an entirely Marvel-heavy discussion, including Days of Future Past, but also the Edgar Wright Ant-Man situation, the new Guardians of the Galaxy trailer, and a couple other things.
Sweet.
So enjoy the music.
Bye, guys.
Did you know that the trash, they pick up the trash, the trash, the trash, they pick up the trash. They should know it when they see it. They get a good look every day in the mirror. They get a good look every day in the mirror.
We're the number one rock and roll group in the world, and we are going to see that everything is going to be different. It's all got to change. The first thing we're going to do is we're going to build a radio station tomorrow. And we're not going to play any commercials and no news, just rock and roll and the truth. One, two, three, four!
Started the recording back up. Okay, hey guys and gals and everything in between. We are going to start this next half with not so heavy Marvel discussion. I'm going to bring us in and talk about Dungeons and Dragons.
Dungeons and Dragons.
For those of you not denizens of this part of the nerdosphere, the new Dungeons and Dragons edition, previously branded as Dungeons and Dragons Next, is coming out later this summer with the new starter box, which is the equivalent of like the big red box, being available in July.
What's in the box, Mike?
What's in the box is the first module of the next Dungeons & Dragons edition. That's what's in the box. The new Dungeons & Dragons edition is just called Dungeons & Dragons. They dropped the next. For those of you who may not know, the previous editions were advanced Dungeons and Dragons from the like 80s until the 90s. Oh, it's 2.0, Advanced Dungeons & Dragons, 3.0, 3.5, 4.0, and Wizards of the Coast decided, hey, we're just going to call it Dungeons & Dragons. And this is what people have been playtesting for the last, like, few years, like, ever since 4.0 came out and everyone, well, not everyone, but at least half of the Dungeons & Dragons community kind of came out and were like, fuck 4.0,
yeah.
3.5 had its problems, we're going to start playing Pathfinder. Which is pretty much like 3.5, but we fixed a bunch of the shit that was wrong with 3.5.
Yeah, well, wasn't your whole thing with 4.0 is that, like, the characters are too overpowered, so there's not really any challenges?
That is one of the problems that happened in 4.0, is that they really, really tried to give players this huge, huge power creep. So by, like, the time they were 5th level, they were taking on gods and stuff, which... for those of you who are not so in tune with Dungeons & Dragons, Dungeons & Dragons, to me, at least as a dungeon master, as a DM, someone who runs the game, is broken into two parts. There's the role-playing aspect, and there's the strategy combat aspect. And
combat.
Yeah. The role-playing aspect doesn't...
Is it Mortal Kombat?
Sometimes, yes. Sometimes it is Mortal Kombat. Depends on how you play the game. For me, the role-playing aspect really doesn't rely on the mechanics that Wizards of the Coast or some of the third-party licensors put out, but the strategy combat aspect does. And that is a huge part of the game and is a huge draw for some why some people do play the game is totally because of that strategy combat aspect. And one of the greatest failings of 4.0, and at least in my opinion and a lot of people that I've talked to, was that the rule set gave players way too much power way too early, so that by the time they reached like 5th or 6th level, they were already way too overpowered, taking on like ancient dragons and gods and things that 5th level characters should not even be thinking about.
They just have like a natural like plus to their dice rolls. Like, oh, I get plus 15, so even if you roll a 1,
yeah,
it's still a really good hit.
So I'm really excited about Dungeons & Dragons. Just Dungeons and Dragons, we'll just call it Next, just for the sake of distinguishing it from the other editions. But one of the other great things that I am excited about is not just the new rule set coming out, but the new campaign setting. The new default campaign setting for this Dungeons and Dragons edition is the Forgotten Realms.
Okay.
Forgotten Realms is a huge, huge, huge part of my experience with Dungeons & Dragons because I grew up not only playing 3.5, but also playing the Dungeons & Dragons video games like Baldur's Gate, Shadows of Am, Planescape Torment, Icewind Dale, Neverwinter Nights, Neverwinter Nights 2.
Neverwinter Nights 3, really?
No, I didn't put one out.
No, I was going to say, you missed the golden opportunity to be like Electric Boogaloo.
Actually, the funny thing is, the third and final expansion for Neverwinter Nights did feature a heavy electric theme.
Oh, I thought you were going to say, featured lots of boogaloos.
It was kind of a boogaloo. I'm really excited because up until this point, every time a Dungeons & Dragons edition has been released, there has been a Forgotten Realms handbook released after the fact.
Okay.
And it kind of tells you, like, okay, well, here are the rules, but here are the rules that how they apply to the Forgotten Realms. But now, Forgotten Realms is the default campaign setting, and they're actually making their first default module about the tyranny of dragons, and they're bringing the whole conflict of Tiamat and Bahamut into it.
Yeah.
So it's really making me excited because I grew up with all these places like Neverwinter, Baldur's Gate, the Ten Towns, Luskin, all these different places. And now not only are these places just kind of this, you know, redheaded stepchild that is playing second fiddle to the Eberron and Dragonlance campaign settings, but they are now the default campaign setting. So we might actually get to see characters like, you know, Wulfgar and Brunor Battlehammer and Drizzador Urden and all these really, you know, the Ballspawn, people like the Nightwatch or the Captain of the Knights from Neverwinter, like playing huge important parts in these modules. Deacon, we get to see Deacon maybe in the player's handbook. Like
maybe that. Not it's not even guaranteed. It's just a maybe.
It just makes me excited to see these really cool, awesome characters that they've established in the Forgotten Realms universe maybe playing an important part in being able to be exposed to the Dungeons and Dragons audience at large.
Yeah, the you're very excited, as detailed by the photo of you I just Instagrammed on our new Instagram page.
Yeah, plug our Instagram. I'm actually sweating, like I feel flushed. I'm so excited about this.
Yeah, no. So we're gonna end the D&D talk right there to talk about our new Instagram, and I just made this past weekend. It's just Instagram.com/themimocast. That's THEMIMOCAST. We have 31 followers.
We're not doing... whoop. That's like more followers than I have on my personal Instagram. So
yeah, that's what happens.
Yep.
So we're not doing too bad, and we'll try to post like whenever we go out to watch movies or record or do other things. We'll talk about that, and we'll actually talk about an excursion we're going on towards the end of the podcast. But I want to get into the new Guardians of the Galaxy trailer.
I am Groot.
He says it so sexy. He's like, I'm Groot.
I'm a Grooty little baby.
Yes, so the new trailer debuted this past week on Monday, and then it was packaged with the X-Men Days of Future Past. And I gotta say, it definitely looked better on the big screen to see all that happening.
Yes.
And I was already excited for this movie. I feel like it's gonna be like the big sleeper hit. It's a big risk for Marvel, but I think it's gonna pay off. I keep hearing a lot of buzz. People who don't even know about what the Guardians are don't even really care. They're just excited by seeing all this stuff going on.
Yeah, I think they're just excited about Marvel. I think Marvel has kind of hit its stride, and people are just really excited. Marvel could shit in their hands and be like, guys, check this out. And everyone would be like, hey, I'm going to go see that.
They could, like, buy the Flintstones franchise and give the Great Gazoo his own movie.
Hello there, dum-dums.
Exactly.
And, Guardians of the Galaxy 2, Kazoo's Electric Boogaloo.
So many electric boogaloos.
Dude, boogaloos are the thing to do in 2014.
Yep, you're the boogaloo.
Yeah, and so, you know, we finally got to see, we finally got to hear Vin Diesel say his one line.
Yeah.
And then we got to hear a couple lines from Bradley Cooper's Rocket Raccoon. And on top of seeing a bunch of extra footage, we finally got to see Glenn Close. Because we've only heard that she was going to be in it, we have yet to see any footage, and so that finally showed like a quick glimpse of her. I didn't even realize it was her the first time I saw the trailer.
Yeah, neither did I.
She's that blonde-haired woman, like that when they show John C. Reilly at the Nova Corps.
Yeah,
you know, and so I guess she's like the head of the Nova Corps.
Okay, she deserves to be the head of the Nova Corps. She has no peer.
Yeah, and close. Maybe Meryl Streep, but she's not in this.
Nope. I think they're like apples and oranges.
Okay. I can accept that, just as long as you're not dissing the Streep.
No, never.
All right. Speaking of diss,
Master of the Segway.
Segway. Recently, and by recently I mean like Friday, Edgar Wright and Marvel went their separate ways in regards to the Ant-Man franchise. All was said was that they've split due to creative differences. We don't really have any information as to what those differences are. All we have is rumors and hearsay, but the big rumor is that Edgar Wright, I guess, was told by higher-ups, higher than Kevin Feige, or however you pronounce his last name, at Marvel, hey, we need to kind of do something a little bit different in this Ant-Man script. So they gave him, like, a list of notes, and he apparently did as much as he could about compromising his story, and they still had more stuff that wanted to be changed, so they handed it to, like, a lower-level writer, and they kind of, like, just dumbed it down, or I don't know how you want to, like, say it,
I think it's just too many smash cuts. It was just a smash cut here, smash cut there, smash cut here. Cameo of Simon Pegg and Nick Frost doing stuff. Smash cut, smash cut, smash cut.
I'm okay with more smash cuts.
Yeah, his directing style. You can actually tell if you go back and watch things like, Spaced, was it? Yeah, it was Spaced, right? Yeah. Spaced. You can tell. Like, even since then, that's been his directing style. That smash cut, telling the entire story in the beginning of the episode or the movie. I think that maybe Ant-Man really couldn't be an Edgar Wright movie.
I disagree. I feel like Edgar Wright had the perfect, he could have had the perfect view, you know, like, because he did an amazing interpretation of Scott Pilgrim, you know.
This is true.
So I feel like he could have handled the comic book movie better than anyone else to date has. I feel like he could have succeeded at what Ang Lee tried to do in his Hulk.
Hmm.
You know?
Maybe.
That's how I feel. I felt like it was the perfect pairing to give this offbeat director an offbeat character.
This is... I can see what you're saying. And I slightly agree with you. But I also think that his style of directing and the way he handles cinematography and the way he paces his movies might not have jived with the already established Marvel movies.
Yeah, which I feel is probably what the case is. Mm-hmm. He probably wanted it to be less shared universe and more... Yeah, he wanted it to be, like, less shared universe and more, I guess, like, standalone film. And I guess there's, like, well, we can't really do that. This is the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll figure out more as it develops, and we will keep you updated. Speaking of other Marvel departures, so Drew Goddard, or Goddard, I don't know how to pronounce his last name, left the still in pre-production Daredevil TV show coming to Netflix.
Yeah, we already talked about this, and we both kind of agreed that it's probably because he's doing the new movie, right? He's doing the next Sinister Six. Yeah, so he's doing the Sinister Six movie, and it kind of how we feel about it, we talked about it earlier, and is that he made the decision of, do I want a multi-million-dollar movie, or do I want to produce or make a TV show that's only going to be on the internet?
Well, Netflix, not internet per se, but yeah. And I feel like most people would go for the multi-million dollar franchise of Spider-Man and Sony right now, which you can't blame him.
Yeah.
You know, and so he departed. So he's out. And then his replacement, who is a former, I guess, writer on Buffy and Angel, is Stephen S. DeKnight.
Okay.
Who I don't really know too much about. What I knew of Goddard is that he worked heavily on Cabin in the Woods, which is why I was super excited about what he could possibly have done with Daredevil.
Yeah. And, well, we're still getting a Buffy alumni. Yeah. We're still getting someone who's worked very closely with Whedon.
Yeah. I feel like this split is the more amicable of the two, and this is the one that where the franchise or the property will suffer or like see less change because of it, if any change at all.
Yeah.
You know, because this is supposed to be part of like a television universe, but instead of going to TV, it's just going to Netflix, where you have a Luke Cage show, Jessica Jones, Iron Fist, and then in Defenders, like meetup for all these street level heroes, which is actually we talked about this beforehand, before we started recording, to kind of brief Mike up in that one of the big things they're doing is their contract is they're going to film all the external shots in New York just to help, you know, bring more income to the city, which is really awesome.
That is really cool. I like that.
You know, it's like, why film it in L.A. when these characters are in New York? Like,
or even film it in Canada, which is what they're doing with a lot of city shots that take place in L.A. and New York. They film them in, like, Vancouver and stuff.
Fucking Canucks taking our money. But, yeah, so we'll see how these all play out. I feel positive about the Daredevil. I'm on the fence about Ant-Man, especially because, like I said, Edgar Wright and Joe Cornish put a lot of work into this script, and I think Edgar Wright's the one who came up with the Ant-Man idea to begin with to Marvel, like way back in like 2006 or so.
Okay,
you know, there's even like I don't know if you've seen like the Ant-Man like test footage where how Edgar Wright plans like kind of like do like really make it to like a spy action movie. But make the character's power believable.
Okay.
It looks pretty amazing, and I'll show you once we're done.
Okay.
Yeah. And our next talking point is a bit of a segue into X-Men, the movie that we just saw, but X-Men comic universe. So Sarah Pacelli, you know, pretty much the artist when it comes to Marvel, or at least one of my favorite of the modern age, released a preview image for All New X-Men issue, what is it, issue 32?
Yeah.
And it says, shows Miles Morales, Ultimate Spider-Man of the Ultimate Universe, you know, I guess being welcomed or joining the All New X-Men team. And so I'm wondering, like, what exactly is going on? Like, Brian Michael Bendis, the writer of the book, even Tumblr'd it and said, this is real, enjoy your weekend, smiley emoji.
It doesn't seem like that big of a stretch for me because Spider-Man has joined.
It's not a stretch, but it's more like what exactly is going on, especially because given that Miles it's not just a separate line. He's in a separate universe. Like it takes which isn't out of the realm of possibility to do interdimensional travel.
Yeah.
But what would be the cause of them having to travel between dimensions or meeting up? Because All New X-Men already has the original five X-Men displaced in time. So now it's like, not only are we time traveling, but we're going from dimension to dimension. You know?
I think Madame Web comes and picks up Miles and is like, all right, we got some shit to do over in this universe. And it just drops him off. There, I just wrote the entire book.
And then she, well, I was going to say, Professor Xavier's dead, but if he wasn't, and then he takes her out to coffee.
Yep, and they go out for coffee, and they have a lovely time, and they agree to see each other at the opera a few nights later.
They consummate their relationship, and 9 months later, she'll give birth to the next Spider-Man, X-Men villain.
Yep, that's how it's going to go.
Because clearly, whenever good people have kids, they're always evil.
Yep.
Yeah. So I'm excited. I love Miles. I just actually picked up the two most recent all-new X-Men issues. Mm-hmm. And I'm excited to see how this crossover is going to play out. We'll find out more, I guess, once the holiday weekend is over. And now that we're on the topic of X-Men, we can talk about the big, big movie that came out this weekend.
Yeah, we went to the, well, 11:30, but the midnight showing of...
It's the midnight showing at 11:30.
At 11:30. Of the X-Men Days of Future Past.
The movie started at midnight once you factor in the trailers.
Yeah, that's true. And I gotta say, it was worth staying up until 3 o'clock in the morning for.
Yeah.
It definitely was.
Yeah.
Especially when I had work the next day. I was the next day at work. Like, my coworkers were like, so, how was it? Like, I was like, go see it. Just go see it. That's all I can say is go see it. For me, it really, even though a lot of people are complaining about the retcon.
Yeah.
Because basically the entire premise of this movie is it is a bridge. It is a bridge movie that is retconning the first three X-Men movies.
I wouldn't even say it's retconning them. I would say it's more so retconning the third X-Men movie.
Okay.
And then a couple things from the Wolverine or X-Men Origins, and then tiny, tiny little things from X1 and 2, if that.
Yes. It is a retcon. It is a reboot of the series without being a reboot.
Yeah.
And it is basically allowing Fox to get out of the corner that they painted themselves into with X3. Because this entire time, all these Wolverine movies and even
First Class
seems like just a stalling tactic to kind of, like, throw more X-Men out into the world so that people are still, you know, it's still in the...
Well, it's not even just that, but the terms of their contract, if they don't, like, use their properties, like, if they don't put out a film every so often, they lose the rights. That's exactly what happened with Daredevil.
Mm-hmm.
We went back to Marvel.
So, I think this movie is kind of a bridge between the old franchise and what they're planning to do with the new franchise, which is, at the end of this movie, we got the Apocalypse scene. Which, I have to say, I liked the scene, and I liked what they did with it, but the whole CGI in that scene was absolutely fucking terrible.
It wasn't absolutely terrible, but it could have been better. Mm-hmm. Especially given we saw a whole movie with pretty good CGI.
Exactly. Those Quicksilver scenes.
Dude, that Nixon...
Oh, my God. I like how we were the only people in the theater laughing when he goes, I want to talk about this off the record.
And then someone pulls out the drawer and turns off the tape player.
And we were dying, and everyone in the theater is just kind of looking at us like, what are these two fucking weirdos laughing at Nixon for?
I want to say it was because of youth, but a lot of those people looked close to our age.
Yeah.
And so I was really confused about how that worked.
I don't know.
People just don't know history.
Yeah, people just don't know history. I mean, like, in my last assignment with the temp agency I work for, my boss at the last assignment, I made a joke about the 1920s. And he was like, I don't know what you kids are into these days. And I was like, seriously, man? I just made a history joke, and you're talking about what us kids are into these days. Yeah. You're, like, 10 years older than me. You should at least have some knowledge of the Gilded Era and the 1920s in some respect, shape, or form.
Yeah. But no, speaking of Quicksilver, his whole moment in there was, like, from beginning to end, perfect. It might have been one of the best parts of the movie.
I think so. And even that little joke they made at the end where they're talking about Magneto, and he's like, oh, he could control metal. My mom knew a guy who could do that.
Yeah.
I lost my shit. I lost it.
Almost the same thing with Nixon. Almost nobody in the theater got it.
Yeah. There was a few more people laughing with us that time.
That was like 5.
Yeah.
But I was like, really? Come on. Come on, people. Come on.
Really?
You know, this movie really does do a lot of course correcting for pretty much, like, fixing a lot of the errors they made while also making a couple of small errors itself.
Yes.
But overall, the small errors that they make are pretty forgivable. The one thing that is still, I hope they address this in the next Wolverine movie, because that's supposed to be the next, I believe, slated X movie. I think it's like 2015 is the new Wolverine, 2016 is X-Men Apocalypse.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the big things is, okay, at the end of X3, you know, the after credits scene, Professor Xavier, like, wakes up in a new body, But for me, it's like, well, that's like the body of some random individual. Does that mean he still has his powers? Does he not have his powers in that body? Like, what was going on with that? You know, like, and so if you didn't watch Wolverine, but if you had, there's the after credit scene where you see Patrick Stewart and Ian McKellen come out as Magneto and Xavier stopping Wolverine at the airport. Mm-hmm. And then he's like, well, how is this possible? You know, like, because, you know, Magneto got depowered, but at least at the end of the X3, you see him kind of move the chess piece over. Yes. So slightly. So that, you know, we can piece that together, but we're still left wondering what exactly happened with Charles.
Who knows? I think, well, for me, now that this movie came out, all the other movies, like, they still kind of took place in my mind, but they are open to serious or heavy alterations to timeline,
yeah,
plot, scope, everything. So for me, it's not really that big of a deal that, like, oh, there's loose plot points from the previous movies.
Yeah, well, you bring up a really good thing that someone pointed out to me. I read in an article. Is, you know how Beast is talking about how time is a river?
And yes.
You can cause, like, a ripple by throwing a stone into it, but it always corrects itself in the end. It's still going to end up in the same place.
Mm-hmm.
Is that just the little things they did here and there are, you know, little ripples in time that kind of change how things happen, which is how they can do the whole course correction thing.
Yes.
So even if we got little mistakes here and there for whatever reason, you know, just the fact that they're meddling with the time stream kind of fixes it.
Yeah.
Which I guess the explanation we're going to have to just take.
No, and that actually makes me excited for X-Men again.
Yeah.
It really does. Because a lot of people I've seen on, like, Facebook and Twitter kind of complaining about the course correction and the retcon. Guys, it means, you know, with the previous movies being the way they were, that means we could not have any more X-Men movies.
Yeah.
With so many of the characters dead, Fox was not going to take a risk introducing some of the more... you know, offhand and not so much in the spotlight X-Men into the new movies. So we weren't going to have new X-Men movies, but now we get to have new X-Men movies, and that's a good thing.
Speaking of introduced characters, they introduced some new X-Men,
mm-hmm,
into the apocalyptic future.
Yeah.
And one of the big ones that I thought was... her powers were handled so well was Blink, the teleporter that throws, like, the little arrows.
Oh, dude, and they did that, like... When she threw Colossus into the air,
she opens the portal to where he's like hundreds of feet up in the air. He jumps through, opens up his entrance to right next to her to, like, use all that momentum to hit the Sentinel.
That's some Aperture Science type shit, yeah, right there.
That's how Blink's powers are, though. Which,
yeah,
which makes her, like, a superior teleporter because she, like, doesn't need to, like, see where she's going. She can just be like boom, boom, and
yeah,
really do it. Which is why I thought, you know, I was like, wow, that was handled great. And the best part is she signed a 5-movie deal.
Oh, this is going to be cool. I'm excited.
So you're going to see a lot more of her in the, mm-hmm, future. And I think I was reading somewhere is that she's actually supposed to be an X-Men Apocalypse, so I'm not sure how that's going to work per se,
mm-hmm,
but we'll see. Because, mm-hmm, we don't know how old she technically could be. You know, if Mystique being as old or as young as she is, and Simon Wolverine, maybe she has a slowed aging. Who knows?
Who knows?
I mean, or maybe part of the movie might take place in the future. It might just be like a cameo scene in an aftercut. We don't know.
Yeah.
But the point is we're going to see more of Blink. And I want to see more of these new characters. I definitely want to see more of Sunspot. I want to see more of Bishop,
mm-hmm,
who was a badass. I just,
yeah.
And I do want to talk about the... I feel like the older X-Men didn't spend enough time in the post-apocalyptic future. I felt like they could have given us an extra 10 or 15 minutes. It wouldn't have made the movie too long. It would have really helped us see more of these X-Men, especially because I felt like Ian McKellen, for being there, didn't get as much dialogue as he deserved.
This is true.
Yeah. Patrick Stewart, they were able to really put him in there and gave us the minimum acceptable amount of Patrick Stewart.
Yes.
But, like, Ian McKellen didn't get enough.
This is true. But what they did give him, I mean, he ran with.
Yeah.
That bromance between him and Patrick Stewart really shone, yeah, through in the very few lines that he had.
Yeah.
So that was enjoyable to watch. But definitely more Ian McKellen. Maybe, I mean, with Michael Fassbender's portrayal of, yeah, Magneto, how is McKellen going to carry that into the future?
Yeah.
Because now the Ian McKellen from the post-apocalyptic future doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah.
And they might actually still be fighting,
yes,
in this new alternate timeline.
Yeah.
So how is he going to carry Michael Fassbender's portrayal of Magneto into the new future?
Yeah. Well, the final talking point I wanted to mention here as far as the X-Men movie goes is, so we've talked about the timeline of, like, movies. So, like, new Wolverine movie gonna take place in current timeline.
Yeah.
And then the year after, X-Men Apocalypse. But there's nothing scheduled after that. My question is, are they going to revisit the original trilogy characters that we saw now that everything's kind of course-corrected and they can do something? Is that something we're going to have to wait until 2017 for? Is there something they might announce sooner? Well, will the next Wolverine movie be titled Wolverine, but really have those characters make some cameos? Because at the end of the movie, Professor Xavier says that we have a lot to talk about, so I feel like they could really put Ian McKellen in there for, like, a decent amount of scenes to really catch up to speed as to what the fuck has changed.
Exactly. No, I think they're just going to redo re-release the first three movies. Like, we talked about this after we watched it. They're just going to re-release the first three movies and hope nobody notices.
Because, what was it, like, so, like, the X-Men First Class is in the 60s, this one is in the 70s, the next one is in the 80s, so, like, the next one is, like, in the 90s.
Yep.
So it's pretty much, they just reshoot that first movie a la George Lucas.
Yep. They just throw some Ewoks in.
I was gonna say they can't do that. Ewoks are Disney.
Ah, well, you know, they can just take out all the guns and put walkie-talkies and flashlights.
Cyclops' eyes are walkie. They're flashlights.
They're just big flashlights.
Speaking of which, that was like the best. Like, it was crazy when he sees Jean and she's like, "What's up with you?" And then Ryze with the toucher. He's like, "Whoa, slow down there, cowboy."
I was like, "Oh snap! They're about to bro down," but then they didn't.
Yeah.
And he was like, "It's good to see you." And then Lynn Scott was just like, "What the fuck are you talking about, asshole?
I'm Cyclops. I hate you."
Yeah.
You know, so, like I said, this really brought back the X franchise and really leaves us in a exciting future to be in.
Yeah.
You know, where we're going to have a bunch of X movies that are going to kick ass again, mm-hmm. you know, after having a couple of fumbles.
Yes.
So we'll see how that goes, and before we bid you farewell, we just want to give you a heads up that we will be at the Long Beach Comic Expo this weekend. The expo is 2 days, May 31st, Saturday, and June 1st, Sunday. We will be at Saturday. We won't be there Sunday.
Okay. Yeah, so we're going to be there. I know there's very few of you who actually listen to us, but if you do listen to us and you want to come hang out with us and you're going to be there, hey, hit us up on Twitter, let us know what's going on, and we would love to actually meet some of the people out there listening to our podcast.
And we're also going to just promote the hell out of it while we're there.
Yeah.
And be like, hey,
blah, blah. We should get NemoCast shirts made.
If you can make a design, we could probably get, like, a low-budget shirt made to wear and look like losers, but yes.
Oh, I'm going to bust up my Wacom tablet now.
Do it. With that, we bid you a farewell until episode 4, A New Hope.
Bye, guys.
It's time to say goodbye.